So when I said velvet, start fucking.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go? Please step the fuck up, out of the way early.
My sin.
Oh, fuck, psych, set on the dog's goal.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I'm the horror nerd, Todd Struch.
And one day I really need to write a book about Lyft, you know, Lyft drivers I have known. I will tell you, I've had some beauties over the last couple of weeks. I have to be at work at 6:45, and I can catch a bus, but I'm not getting up at 4 in the morning to catch a bus. So, and it's only about $10 to get from where I live to work from Lyft, using Lyft. So I don't mind it too much. But Jesus, some of the drivers are just fucking incredible.
Well, I'm sure Lyft drivers say the same thing about some of the passengers they pick up.
Well, I have no doubt about that. This one driver I had the other morning, he was listening to talk radio, which was my first red flag when they start listening to talk radio.
Yep.
And the topic of conversation was this woman had called in and her husband had found out that she was sexting somebody else who lived in another state or whatever, and he's going to divorce her now. And so she thinks he's overreacting. And the driver says, "Man, if that had been my wife, I would have beat the shit out of her." And I'm like, well, okay then. And then he goes, you know, there's a difference between beating the shit out of somebody and a slap. Sometimes women just need a fucking slap. And I'm like, and this was all unprovoked. I didn't ask his opinion on this. He just offered it to me as a courtesy, like, you know, a little bit extra, as if I needed that at 6 o'clock in the fucking morning.
Wow.
Then the driver today thought it was okay to slow down so he could change lanes on the freeway.
Wow.
So that's my week.
Nice.
Lyft needs to be a bit more discerning about their drivers. Well, listen,
try Uber sometime.
They're worse. Dude, they are worse.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I've had some winning drivers. I don't use car services a lot, but when I do, I get some winners.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, there was one time, I don't know what this guy was listening to. Now, look, I don't remotely care. Like, I understand that unlike like a taxi service, Uber and Lyft, like you're getting into someone's personal vehicle. So I don't give a shit like what they're listening to or whatever. You know, just keep this guy started rocking out to like some kind of Eastern kind of music. I don't know if it was Indian or Pakistani or what. I thought this guy was going to let go of the wheel and literally just start dancing inside the car. Yeah. And I'm like, dude, the music's cool. I don't care, but can you pay attention to drive? Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Right.
I'm like, okay.
Oh, boy.
So before we start, I don't know if you saw it on social media, but it's back. I resurrected my other podcast, Ranting and Raving.
I did see that. I haven't had a chance to listen yet.
The world has been pissing me off so much.
I've noticed you've been a little bit crankier than normal.
A little salty. Yeah. Of all the flavors that are out there, I chose salty. But yeah, I just got to a point where I'm like, I have to blow off some steam, and what better way to do it than to make everyone else listen to me off. So I recorded a new Ranting and Raving. I put it out there. We'll see what people think. I'm gonna try to get to it a little more often, you know, than once every 3 months. But so yeah, check it out, folks. Shameless self-promotion time. It's hosted by the same place, Podomatic, where the Imaginarium lives. So just go there and look for Ranting and Raving, and you'll see a little cartoon of my screaming face that people have told me looks just like me.
Well, it does.
But that's why I picked it. I found that at random.
Did you really?
I did, and I would love to give the person credit, but there was no photo credit anywhere that I could find.
I honestly thought that you'd gone on Fiverr and paid somebody to do that. I honestly did.
No, I just was looking for a graphic when I created the podcast, and I just searched, like, I don't know, Shouting Man or Screaming Cartoon or something like that. And I just stumbled across it. And then I did an image search, and it just was like a random cartoon on some website page that I had never heard of. And I looked for a photo credit, and I have been unable to find one. So trust me, if all three people who might listen to the podcast happen to recognize it, just let me know, and I'm more than happy to give credit to the person who made it, but I have been unable to find it. I wish I could take credit for it. But
oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, no, it's just a random cartoon that I found that looks like me.
I learn something new every day.
Yeah, see? Unfortunately, now you forgot something, so you can make room for that little tidbit.
But yeah. No doubt.
But there you go.
Okay. Also, real quick, you had mentioned a movie last week, No One Will Save You.
Yep.
And surprisingly enough, I watched it the next day. And I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot.
Okay. I was waiting for you to say you didn't.
No, I did.
Cool.
I thought the aliens were very well done. Their designs were, the CGI was, you know, a little bit off.
Yeah, yeah, it was. You could tell that it was a limited. They had some budget restraints, you know, I should say.
And I really enjoyed it. And I saw a comment from someone who said that, you know, there's barely any talking in it, which is true. And they considered that lazy writing. And I thought, do you know how hard it is to write a 93-minute movie without any dialogue and have people be able to understand it? That's not lazy writing. That's good fucking writing.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And I read some articles with the writer, director, and, you know, and where he explained that he got through, half the movie before he even realized that there was no dialogue. And then he showed it to somebody, and they're like, no, it seems like it could work. Dude, imagine watching that movie, and every so often the main character is expositing to herself or sitting there on the bed. Okay, now, if I hide under the bed, and then I go in the closet, like, it would be ridiculous. Like, who would do that?
Yeah, no, you know? Nobody would do that.
Right. So I thought it was awesome that they have so little. There's, like, I think there's only 8 actual spoken words in the whole movie.
Yeah. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
The ending was a bit of a rush, I think. But all in all, it was one of the better movies I've seen this year.
Yeah, I agree. I thought I had to really think. I didn't figure out the ending at first. Like, it took me a second, like, for it to click in my brain, like, what was happening, you know? And I have read, like, that's another, like, a complaint, is that some of the, you know, some people are complaining that the ending is too hard to figure out. And I'm like, oh, all right, it was challenging, maybe, but I don't necessarily need everything tied up in a neat little bow. You know what I mean? Like,
well, yeah,
a movie that makes you think, like, okay.
People are just too lazy. People have gotten lazy. They expect everything to be spoon-fed to them. And it just, I think that's far more of an American trait than anything else. Because European movies, it seems, or foreign movies in general, not just European, have endings like that far more often than not. And when you get an ending like the one that you have in No One Will Save You, it confuses people because they don't know what to do. They've forgotten how to think.
Yeah. And, you know, this is a little segue into something I wanted to mention on one of our episodes, and I just keep forgetting. It seems like every movie that comes out now, the next day there will be a YouTube video like No One Will Save You, ending explained. And I guess that's okay. Like, no one's putting a gun to my head to watch it, you know, but I just find it interesting that every movie now needs a companion video to explain it to everyone.
Yeah.
You know,
I just hope Ryan George makes a video of it.
Oh yeah. He's the best. He really is. I watched the pitch video today for Wrath of the Titans, and I almost pissed myself.
Excuse me. He is one of the very few YouTube creators who has not made one single bad video. And he's made hundreds of videos. He doesn't just do the pitch meetings. He does a bunch of other stuff. You know, the first man to do this, or the first man to do that, or, you know, naming things.
Those are the best.
I don't know where he gets his imagination from, but I really want to find out because I could use some of it. I mean, he's hysterically funny, and he's consistent far more than anybody else I've ever seen making YouTube videos.
I agree. And, you know, and like you said, he hasn't really made a bad video. But when you look at the older ones compared to the newer ones, you can see the growth and the progression. You know what I mean?
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
Especially with the pitch meeting, he was still getting used to playing both characters and everything. Now it's seamless, you know?
Yeah.
It's just perfect. But yeah, no, he's great. And now have you seen he's done some of them like pitch meeting revisited?
Yes,
and he talks about, I made this mistake, and I didn't like the way I did this, and he talks about it. It's great.
Yeah.
I definitely need one of his t-shirts. I really do.
Just to support him.
Yeah, you know? And the catchphrases, you know? Barely an inconvenience.
Yep.
Oh. Good stuff.
It is. All right, so we've got a topic this week,
surprisingly
enough. And
I even prepared.
Good. I know. I semi-prepared.
It's a little crazy.
And so, also, surprisingly enough, all of my picks are from horror movies this
really?
Time around. Yeah.
Oh, mine definitely are not.
And I didn't plan it that way. It just happened to be that some of my favorite scenes happen to be in horror movies.
Yeah, mine too. I have a few. Dude, this was by far, for me, one of the toughest of these top lists that we've ever done, because I'm such a movie buff like you.
Yeah.
And there were so many great scenes in cinema.
Yeah.
So that's our topic, is our favorite movie scenes of all time. I kind of let that slip, but oh my God, it was hard. And even now I'm looking at my list on my screen and I have way more than five. So I'm just going to wing it as we go, you know, and just say, okay, I'm going to pick this one, you know?
Yeah, probably a good idea.
So.
All right. So why don't you start it off?
Okay. So the first one is a movie scene that I first saw like as a kid. And it just, even then, before I really knew what movie made, I didn't have no idea what movie making was. I was just a kid watching movies, but it stuck with me. And then later it just stayed. And I find it amazing, especially the way they pulled it off when I learned how they pulled it off. And it's the scene in The Wizard of Oz after Dorothy's house has landed in Oz. And the door opens and everything shifts from sepia tone to Technicolor.
Yeah.
Even now, what, 80 years later, whatever it is, I still find it amazing. It's such a moment. And I can only imagine what it was like being in the theater when that happened. Because Technicolor was still relatively new.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And the way they did it was the set of her bedroom is all decorated and painted in sepia tone.
Yep.
And that the you're looking at the back of her head. That is not Judy Garland. That is her double, her body double, and her outfit and everything is sepia tone. And then you're looking out into the Technicolor. That's how they did that.
Yeah.
And I still find it astonishing to this day. And that there's a lot of sections in that movie that I wait for, but that's the first one is I still wait for that to happen because it's so cool and it's so amazing. So that's my first pick where Dorothy lands in Oz and we shift from the sepia tone to the Technicolor land of Oz. That's my first favorite movie scene.
That's a good pick. And yeah. The part where the feet curl up under the house, that as a kid that gave me nightmares for some reason. It was just creepy.
Dude, there are people, I know grown adults who still don't like the flying monkeys.
Yeah.
Find them creepy, you know? Like it's they were a little much, you know?
Yeah, they were. I'd like to see some of the dwarves riding the flying monkeys. Now that would have been cool.
That would have,
you know, the Munchkins.
The Munchkins
on monkeys. All right. So my first one, it's a movie that I've mentioned probably a couple times over the, you know, almost 10 years we've been doing this, and I mentioned it not that long ago when I was getting my cataract surgery, and it's a scene from the movie. Horrors at the Black Museum, or Horrors of the Black Museum, one of the two. And it's an old British horror film, low budget, not Hammer. And it came out, I think it was 1959. And the scene that has stuck with me since I saw it as a kid, I think I saw it on like the Channel 7 4:30 movie. I think it was the first time I saw it as a kid. You know, this woman gets a package and it turns out to be binoculars. And as she holds them up to her eyes and she's adjusting the focus, two pins shoot out and pierce her eyeballs. And now, of course, 1959, you don't actually see that. All you do see is her screaming, dropping them. And, you know, blood running from her between her fingers as she's, you know, holding her eyes. And it's a very effective scene. And it just, it's just so well done. And, you know, it's, as I said, it stayed with me 50 years now. So it's just a brilliant piece of horror filmmaking. And it's a really, it's a good movie too. I don't want to say really good, but it is a good movie. It's a lot of fun. And you know, if you want something that's not quite Hammer, but you do like British horror,
I do.
Horror at the Black Museum is certainly one to take a look for.
So I don't think I've ever seen it. I had to look it up. I've heard of it. And I'm looking at the cast, and I'm pretty sure I've never seen this movie, so I'm gonna have to check it out.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out, that's for sure.
All right, cool, good one. All right, so my next one is from a horror movie, a very famous horror movie. And I still find it chilling today, as does my daughter. And this is now she hasn't seen nearly as many horror movies as I have, but this is already her favorite horror movie. And there's a lot of great scenes in this movie, but this one is my favorite. And it's the first encounter between Hannibal Lecter and Clarice Starling in The Silence of the Lambs. And she's at the prison or the asylum or whatever it is, and he's just standing there. And that interchange, that whole scene, that interchange between them, and the famous line, "I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti,"
See.
and then that was purely improvised by him. And they kept it in. And there's also a very well-known Mandela effect in this scene. Everyone believes that Hannibal Lecter says, "Hello, Clarice." He doesn't. He had did not know her name when she showed up. He simply says, "Good morning." Everybody swears that he says, "Hello, Clarice." It's been made into memes. It's been made into cartoons and jokes, but he does not say that when they first meet because he had no way to know her name. No one told him she was coming. So everybody's looking it up right now. Fuck you, Todd. He definitely says, "Hello, Clarice." He doesn't. Just trust me on this, you know? But I love it. Like, he just sets that tone because he's so calm. But he's very clearly a fucking psychopath. And it just lays that foundation of the relationship between Hannibal Lecter and Clarice that sets the tone for the rest of the movie. And I remember seeing that in the movies. And I was just like, holy shit, we better buckle up, folks, because this movie's going to be awesome. So that's my number two pick.
That's a good pick. I don't know that I would have thought about that one, but now that you mention
That
it.
was the first, that was when you first mentioned the topic and I first started thinking about it, that's the first one that popped into my head.
Wow. Okay. All right. So my next one is from Carrie, the 1976 Brian De Palma version of Carrie. And having said that, I think pretty much everybody already knows what scene I'm referring to. And it's actually not the pig's blood at the prom, although that was very close. It's the, you know, almost the very ending, the next to last scene where, you know, the girl is visiting Carrie's grave. And as she's putting the flowers down, Carrie's hand reaches up through the grave to grab her arm. And it turns out to be, you know, it was just a nightmare she was having. That's still, it's probably the greatest jump scare in modern cinema. And it still manages to make me jump, even when I know that fucking thing is coming.
You know it's coming.
And
That's a pretty good
it's
one.
shot so beautifully. It's shot like a dream, and there's like a gauzy quality to it. And the music is very lyrical and very all strings. And it looks like it's going to be a beautiful scene somehow. And then, you know, Brian De Palma pulls this trick out of his bag, and it just, you know, and then it escalates into and I forget the character's name, coming up, Sue, I think it was Sue, you know, waking up from the dream and screaming, and the music's getting louder and louder, and it's all frantic and kinetic, and it's such a great way to end that movie.
It is. It is. That's a good pick. That's something I would not have thought of. But that
That
is a good pick.
and
I dig it.
Carrie's mother's death scene. There's a lot of good scenes in that movie.
Yeah, for sure. I just love the way that movie is shot, you know, with the almost, I don't know what else to call them, but like the comic strip panels.
Yeah.
You know, towards the end. Like, I just love the way De Palma shot that movie and cut it together.
Master filmmaker, for sure.
100%. So the other reason I struggled with this list is because, you know, how whenever you and I do one of these lists, we're talking about our favorite whatever versus what do we think is the best. You know what I mean? Right. Like,
yeah.
So, but I found myself falling into the trap with this topic. Like, okay, what are the greatest movie scenes of all time? You know, but that's obviously very subjective. So I was like, okay, what are my favorites? And that's where my next one comes in. Everybody, it's a really well-known movie, and people are going to accuse me of being a little treacly or whatever, but being such a movie buff, I have to repost that little poem that I came up with. I am a film nerd. I don't know if I ever, I don't know when's the last time I posted it, but I wrote a poem a long time ago. I am a film nerd, and it's about,
I don't remember ever seeing that.
All right, then maybe I never post it, but I will. And it's about movies and how much I love movies. So in this one, this next one is in there. And it's sort of a cheat because I'm taking two scenes from the same movie and kind of linking them together because they're similar. Fine. And it's from E.T. And the first part is when E.T. and Elliot fly across the moon on the bicycle.
Uh-huh.
And that John Williams score just swells. And I'm like, this is why I watch movies.
Yeah.
Right there. Elliot and E.T. flying across the moon is pure movie magic to me. And then the same thing happens with the score when they escape at the end. And I hate the fact that they changed it. But they're on the bikes and you see the agents with the shotguns. And boom. The bikes take off again, and they escape. And the score swells again. I still get chills watching it. Because, again, it's just pure movie magic. And John Williams and Steven Spielberg together, there's just nothing better.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
You know? So, yeah, I have – so in my home office, I have a poster right behind me. Obviously, no one can see it. It's an E.T. poster of E.T. and Elliot flying across the moon, and it's signed by a whole bunch of the cast members. And I have a sculpture of the same thing that Dee Wallace gifted to me that is signed by her and Henry Thomas and a couple other people from the movie.
Oh, nice.
That's how much I love that fucking scene from that movie. It's all over my house.
That's very cool.
Yeah, you know, just I love it.
I haven't seen E.T. in years. I really need to watch that again.
That movie, look, I get why there are some criticisms of it. Like the whole E.T. dying and coming back is like Spielberg just yanking really hard on your heartstrings, you know. A little too much, but come on, just so many, dude, at the end of the movie, when E.T. touches Elliot's chest and says, I'll be right here. I am done.
Yeah.
Every time I am done.
Well, nobody would ever accuse Spielberg of being subtle.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
So
I remember when my daughter, when we finally watched E.T., when she was older, she had seen it when she was really little. Don't we watched it when she was older? And she looked at me and she said, Dad, I get it now. They get it. I'm like, I told you.
Yeah.
Spielberg's a magician. He really is.
Well, and it's funny you picked that because my next one is actually a Spielberg movie too.
Oh, cool.
And it's Jaws. I don't
know what it is. Go ahead.
Did you know it was going to be Jaws?
Well, when you said another Spielberg movie and you said they were all horror, I figured, well, it has to be Jaws. And if you duplicated me, I'm going to be astonished, but not surprised. But go ahead. Which is it?
All right. It's the scene where Richard, what's his face?
Richard, what's his face? I didn't know he was in the movie.
Richard Dreyfuss.
Richard Dreyfuss.
He goes down in the shark thing.
Okay.
I think this is it. And he's looking at the ship that's been abandoned at the bottom of the sea or the ocean,
mm-hmm.
and the head pops out.
Ah, okay.
That's another one of those jump scares that, even though I know it's coming, it still scares the shit out of me because they turn up the volume of the music when that happens. And it still always makes me pee my pants.
Well, that also beats due to your age, but.
Well, yeah. to be sorry, fair, waking up in the morning makes me pee my pants.
You lobbed that over that was a slow pitch.
So. Yeah. And again, this is one of those movies where there were a bunch of scenes that I really, really liked that made an impression on me. The woman at the very beginning being pulled down by the shark. Then, of course, Robert Shaw's death as he's as the boat's sinking and he falls into the shark's mouth. But the head popping out just still gets me to this day.
Yeah, that's a good one. That is a good jump scare. So I have a Jaws one on my list, and I thought for sure this is what you were going to go with. I do have a secondary Jaws one that's similar to yours, is when Brody's chumming the water and the shark pops up and he goes, "You're going to need a bigger boat."
Yeah.
That's the coolest jump scare for me. But my favorite scene in Jaws is Quint's monologue about the sinking of the Indianapolis.
Oh, yeah.
That one just never, I never get tired of it. And supposedly, I mean, it's a well-known story, not supposedly, he was drunk when he gave that speech. And which doesn't surprise me, because I think Robert Shaw was pretty much always drunk. But yeah, that I fucking believe him when he gives that speech.
Yeah,
I fucking believe that he was on the goddamn Indianapolis when it sang. Yeah. You know, because he delivers it so well. And even, you know, Richard Dreyfuss and Roy Scheider, you know, are just sitting there in silence listening to him. That is just a great scene. And so you watched season 3 of Picard, right?
Yeah.
You're caught up. So there's a very similar scene when Captain Shaw, Todd Stashwick, gives his speech about Picard and the Battle of Wolf 359.
Yes, I remember that.
And it's very reminiscent. And when I talked to Todd Stashwick and I interviewed him about it, he confirmed that it definitely was inspired by that scene from Jaws. And his character's name, Liam Shaw, is named after Robert Shaw because of that scene from Jaws.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, that is all 100% inspired by the Indianapolis speech from Jaws. That's how enduring that speech is. But yeah, wow, that was incredible. Definitely high on my list. And I was like, this motherfucker's going to steal one of my picks. Which has happened before. Like, we sometimes duplicate when we do these things. So it would not have shocked me if you picked it. So, all right. What do you got next?
My next one is from The Thing. And it's kind of a combination of two things. It's the blood testing scene.
Ooh.
And how that segues into the spider, the head turning into a spider. And it culminates in the line, "Will you untie me from this fucking chair?" You know?
Yeah.
That entire stretch in the movie, it's actually a couple of maybe three scenes. But it's probably the best part of that movie. And there's a lot of good parts to that movie. But the tension you know, when he's sticking the, you know, the hot,
the wire, yeah,
wire into the blood, and you're just waiting for something to happen, and it doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen, and then when it does happen, and you hear that screech, you know, I pissed and pooped my pants.
You know,
it was coming out everywhere.
Yeah, and you know what's so interesting about that movie? It was not a hit when it came out.
No, it was not.
And now it's considered a seminal, you know, sci-fi slash horror movie. You know, and a definitely a cult film.
I really think it was ahead of its time.
I think you're right.
But the amazing thing is, you know, all the effects were practical, obviously, because of when it was filmed. But they all hold up today. Still, it looks fantastic. I watched it not all that long ago, and it's amazing. I still, you know, my jaw still drops sometimes when I watch it. I'm like, how the fuck did they do that?
I know, right?
You know,
yep. So. Movie magic, dude.
It is.
All right. And again, I really struggled. There were so many that I really love. But so for this one, and we can probably get past five because we'll have some time. So these are really in no particular order for me. But this, when people would ask me, what is your favorite movie? I always used to say this one. And then over the years, I changed it to be the sequel to this one. But one of my favorite movie scenes of all time is as you're getting near the end of The Godfather, and it's the baptism scene with Michael Corleone.
Yeah.
His son is being baptized. And as the priest is saying, do you renounce Satan? Yes. And all his works? Yes. After every segue, we cut to one of Michael Corleone's enemies being wiped out.
Yep.
You know, do you reject Satan? Yes. Bam, Mo Green gets it in the face, you know. And after every one, you just see like this beautiful scene in a church and a baby being baptized and a guy literally lying to God. You know, like, and then bam, this person gets whacked, and bam, this person gets whacked, and just that stone look on Michael's face because he knows what's happening. He knows what orders he gave for that day. I just think it is one of the best scenes in just a great, great movie. I could have picked 1,000 scenes.
Yeah,
from The Godfather, but just that one, I just think that juxtaposition of like an innocent baby being baptized and like all these awful things happening at the same time, you know,
it's a brilliant piece of filmmaking. It absolutely is.
It is. And then I later changed my opinion. The Godfather 2 is now my favorite movie. But for years, I would always say The Godfather. And then the more I thought about it, I think Godfather 2 is just a little bit better. But anyway.
I think I agree with you on that. But I still prefer Goodfellas to The Godfather.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I always took... not some heat, but because how can you, like, when someone says The Godfather is their favorite movie, like, you can't really attack them too hard, you know.
Yeah.
But people would say, oh, that's such an easy pick, it's so cliche to say that, and I'm like, but I'm not saying it to be pop, I'm saying it because it is legit my favorite movie. I'm not trying to be one of the cool kids because I say I like The Godfather. You know, I just really love that movie. What do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, no, it's a good movie. I've got the trilogy on Blu-ray.
But yeah, no, to say you prefer Goodfellas, that's legit. I won't even fight you on that. And there, trust me, there's plenty of I would fight you for.
Yeah, I know that.
but not that one. I'll let that go.
All right. So my next one is the one that actually gave me the idea for this movie, for this topic. And again, it has to do with that picture that I posted on Facebook and Instagram last week or a week before of that very long hallway that I have at work, and how it just seems to go on forever. And it reminded me of the ending scene in Poltergeist where Joe Beth Williams is, running towards the door, and the hallway just elongates, and she keeps, losing, footage as she's trying to get to the door. And it's just such an intense scene. And the way they do that hallway has always stuck with me, because it's just so well fucking done.
Yeah, man, that's a good one. I thought you were going to say the hallway from The Shining. Danny on the tricycle, maybe.
Yeah, no, it's... Well, I don't like The Shining. I've never really liked
That's true. That's true. You've always said that you're not a fan.
It was that scene, as I said, specifically, because that corridor at work reminded me of it. But also the other scene that really stuck with me in that movie was when she slides into the pool and all the dead bodies come popping up.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that. I saw that opening night, and I went with a friend of mine from school, because I was in high school at the time. And it was packed. It was sold out. And there were lines for the next showing after the one I went into. It was unlike anything I'd ever really seen. And the audience, when that happened, the sound, the collective groan from the audience when she slides into the pool and the dead bodies start floating up. I will never forget that. It was a bonding moment with that entire audience, which sadly doesn't happen much at movies anymore.
Oh, good. That's a good one, man. So do you have a couple of more on your list?
Because
you've got some time.
I do.
Okay, good. Let's keep going.
All right.
So, I really thought, my next one is from a horror movie. And I remember thinking at the time, holy shit, I really didn't see that coming. Now, just a little bit of setup here. It won't take long. I am not one of these people who is just going to sit back and no matter what happens, say, oh, I knew it all along. Oh, yeah, I knew it. Sometimes I'm legit. I didn't figure it out. And it was a moment where I was like, holy fucking shit. And it's from Saw, the first one. And the reveal at the end that Jigsaw is actually alive in the room the whole time. I was like, holy fucking shit. That is awesome. And I did not see that coming. And I just thought that was a freaking brilliant ending in the movie. Now, it does bother me that the Carrie Elway's character sawed off his foot instead of just reaching for the cell phone with the fucking saw.
Yeah,
because he could have reached it with the saw and pulled it over to himself. And I'm like, how did he not think of that? But the fact that Jigsaw was alive. Oops, I just spoiled it. Sorry, folks. The fact that Jigsaw was alive the whole time in the room was fucking cool.
Oh, definitely.
And I love that reveal. Even my daughter, I remember. So my daughter was only like 14 or whatever when she first started kind of watching horror movies. And then one day she calls me, or she texts me, I can't remember. She's like, Dad, guess what? What? A friend of mine had a sleepover, and guess what we watched? Like, what? We watched all 8 Saw movies. And I'm like, oh God, you know, like, I thought she was a little young for that at the time, but then she's like, Dad, can you believe he was alive the whole time in the first one? And I'm like, well, that was pretty cool. So there you go. That's why my daughter is the way she is.
Yeah, and I'm sure your ex-wife is thrilled about that too.
She has given up complaining about she's given up finally complaining about the horror movie thing, because finally I was just like, you know what, of all the things like for you to be mad about, shut the fuck up. People like horror movies, you know, right. The fact that you don't like them, tough shit. Your daughter likes horror movies, get over it.
Exactly.
Scott, I, you know, I've let little glimpses of my life in over the years, and I think it had nothing to do with horror movies. She just doesn't like whenever my daughter and I bond over anything.
Yeah, I'm sure that's probably the case.
You know, and the fact that we both like horror movies, you know, I think it was more about that. So
I'm sure you're right about that.
All right. What do you got?
Oh, so this is from my favorite movie, my favorite horror movie.
Okay, which I know what it is. Go ahead.
Yes, it's Hellraiser. Yep. You know what it is.
Yep.
And it's the very end when Frank gets pulled apart. But most specifically is when he's licking his lips seductively at Kirsty and then says, Jesus, what?
Yeah.
And then he gets pulled apart. That is so creepy. I mean, here he is, you know, stretched out. He's got dozens of hooks in him all over his body. And he's leering at her and licks his lips like that. It just...
Yeah.
I fucking love that.
Yeah, and that movie, we've talked about this before. That movie still holds up today. It really does.
It does. It really does.
I think I like part two a little bit better.
See, I wasn't crazy about part two. Because I... the doctor, what was it, Kennard?
Kennard, yeah.
Kennard. He was kind of like a one-liner villain, and that just seemed out of place in the Hellraiser universe.
All right, fair enough. Okay. I mean,
yeah,
I'll buy it.
I liked it, but not as much as the first one. Well, there's very rarely, especially in Hellraiser, any of the sequels that are worth, you know, raving about. Although I do like the third one a lot.
Not so much. I did like part four. When it goes into how the box was created and the,
all right, then
Mama
it's part,
Sean,
it's part four. Know. I was thinking of that.
Okay,
one.
Yeah, that's I do kind of, and then after that, I think I just got weary of them. You know,
yeah.
I'm like, all right, enough. Like, but all right, we have a little more time, so I think I'll do one more. Ooh, what do I pick? What do I pick? There's a few, but. I am going to go with the Robert De Niro as Travis Bickle talking to himself in the mirror in Taxi Driver.
I can see that.
You're talking to me? Okay. I don't see anybody else here. So you must be talking to me, you know? And it's just the acting, the writing, his mannerisms are just so disturbing, you know?
Yeah.
And... It's become a part of pop culture. Like people who have never even seen the movie, if you say those lines, they know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Oh, Taxi Driver, Robert De Niro, right? Like, yeah. And they're like, well, I never saw the movie, but I know what that is. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So, just such a good movie, and just such great acting, and just such a great scene. So, yeah, that was definitely one of my favorites. That was probably the second one that popped into my head when I started coming up with the list.
Yeah, that's a really good scene now that you mention it. All right, so I have one quick one that's actually not horror. But when you mentioned Carrie Elwes earlier, it reminded me of how much I liked this particular scene. And it was from one of the very first movies that he did. And it's called Another Country, which is a movie I've talked about on the show a few times. Mm-hmm. And there's a scene between him and Rupert Everett. It takes place around towards the early 1900s in an English school. And Rupert Everett's character is a repressed homosexual. And Cary Elwes's character isn't quite as repressed. And there's this such a beautiful scene between the two of them. They're laying in a boat together, and they're just, you know, talking and trying to express feelings. And it's just so beautifully done and beautifully acted. And Cary Elwes in that movie looked like an angel. I mean, and this sounds creepy, you know, for me saying it now, being almost 60, but he was one of the most beautiful people I'd ever seen when I saw him in that movie. And I think he was maybe 18 or 19 at the time. But when I saw the movie, I was also the same age, okay? Because I know there's going to be somebody out there going to make a comment. But it's really a beautiful scene. I love the movie. I haven't watched it in a while. But it just, and when I saw that, I knew that Cary Elwes was gonna go somewhere, because he just had that something. He certainly had the look, but there's he has that movie star presence that you don't see a lot anymore.
And yeah, I agree with that. I've never actually seen it. I'm gonna have to check it out.
Yeah, it's based on a play, and it's also on a true story. And it's a little dry, but it's really, I mean, if you like period pieces,
I do. Yeah, I do.
You know, you'll love this.
All right, I'm gonna have to check it out. And it's streaming apparently all over the place.
Yes, and the guy who was in The King's English, whose name I forget, is also in it too.
The King's English? Oh, Colin Firth, you mean?
Yes, yeah. Colin Firth was also in The King's Speech. Yeah, The King's Speech. Well, speech,
English, whatever.
Same ballpark.
All right, cool. I'm going to have to check that out.
Yes.
So, did you remember to come up with a movie scene that you hate or that you thought was bad?
I've thought about this, and there's so many of those.
I know, there's a lot.
But no, I didn't really pick one.
All right, I did. Just because I'm not, by far, not the only person who thinks this. And it just became such a famous one. It's almost cliche to talk about it, but it's the fake baby scene from American Sniper. So I don't know.
I'm not familiar with that. Okay.
So if you I don't know if you've seen American Sniper, but
no.
It's a Clint Eastwood movie. It's a, you know, it's a war movie. It's a real person, you know, Bradley Cooper plays a guy coming back from war, you know, and he's, you know, the deadliest American sniper, 140 something kills or whatever. And it's him and his wife, played by Sienna Miller. And they're talking, he's talking about his experience. And Bradley Cooper is holding a quote unquote baby that is so obviously a doll. I mean, it's not even close. It is so obviously a doll that it's a laugh out loud scene in a movie that's supposed to be a serious treatise about war, you know?
Yeah.
And he's holding, and I'm thinking, they couldn't get a real fucking baby. I mean, I know there's rules and shit by like how long they can be on screen and whatever, but they put real babies in movies. Like, I mean,
well, yeah.
You know what I mean? Come on, dude. even if you just go, just Google American Sniper baby scene, and you'll see, like, it's not even close. And what's even funny is Bradley Cooper trying to, like, move the doll's arm to get it to look real, or jiggle the head to make it look like the baby is squirming. It is like, are you fucking kidding me? You know? And I picked it because you could pick a movie like The Room, for example, which is nothing but bad scenes throughout the whole movie, you know, or something like that. But this is an otherwise very serious, big Hollywood movie, you know, and it's a Clint Eastwood directed drama. And then you get this scene with the fake fucking baby and it just pulls you right out of it, you know? And I even thought, is he crazy? Like, is it that he's supposed to be like delusional or something? And he thinks that the doll is a real baby, but nope. It's supposed to be a baby. And there you go. So that's my pick for a movie scene that I hate, that I think is stupid.
I'm watching it now, actually.
Oh. Yeah.
That,
right?
Yeah. That's something. Wow.
Yeah. So real quick, without going into deep, I just had a couple of honorable mentions. I'll just run them down real quick. I had the shower scene from Psycho.
Yep. That was on my list too.
I had the I Am Your Father reveal from Star Wars.
Not on my list.
And I had the escape sequence in Shawshank Redemption from when the warden discovers the hole behind the poster to see Andy Dufresne in the rain, you know, with his arms outstretched. That sequence right there, I think, is fantastic.
And my honorable mention is the chest burster scene.
Ooh, good one. How did I not think of that?
Because you're not me.
That's true. That's a good one. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, there you have it, folks. Dude, we could do this whole second episode. We could do 12 episodes about movie scenes. You know, I mean,
we will be revisiting this in the future.
For
no
sure.
Doubt about that.
And you know what? I'll grab a guest. You know, we'll bring in a third party.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Spice it up a little bit. Cool. All right. Yeah, those are some good ones, man. That was a good list and a good topic. Kudos to you, man, for coming up with a good topic. That 380 something episodes, and we never did that one.
Yeah, amazingly enough.
How about that? Right,
we 370. Never, this will be 370.
Okay, wow. So we never thought of this. Okay, good stuff, man. So very good.
Yeah, I come up with a good idea every now and then.
Yeah, you're done for the year now.
I am. Yeah, I shot my load, so I'm good for the year.
Oh, God. All right. So other than work, my friend, what do you got going on?
Just working on the book. I've just been doing it on the weekends because, as I said last week, by the time I get home, I'm just so fucking tired. And I can't even think to concentrate on putting pen to paper. But I have been working on it on the weekend. It's up to about, I think, 43,000 words right now. And I really am enjoying this. And I see the ending in sight, which makes me sad because I really want to spend more time with these characters.
Mm.
So, you know, that'll be done soonish and it'll be out soonish, probably early next year. Because it's going to need a lot of editing. A lot of editing.
Quick question. And I think I've asked you this before, and I just don't remember the answer. Just briefly, because it will kill me. When you say 43,000 words, that doesn't really mean anything to me. Like, what does that translate as far as, like the length of a book, you know, pages-wise, roughly?
Give me a minute, and I'll tell you what the page count is.
All right. I'm just curious, because when... You know, I follow, you know, our buddy Damon Manx, you know, he's writing this magnum opus. And he goes, you know, 540,000 words. And I'm like, oh, all right, that's a lot, but I have no idea what it means. Is that like it, the stand, you know, how is the Bible, you know?
The average length of a novel is about 80,000 words, approximately. Gotcha. 80 to 100,000.
Okay.
All right. So at this point, let's see. I'm actually opening it up. I'm just waiting for it to load. It's about 173 pages.
Okay. Gotcha.
And it's 45,000 words, excuse me. Okay. So it's going to be longer than Barbed Wire Kisses, because that was, I think that was like 39 or 40,000 words, which is a novella.
Right.
You don't really get into a novel territory until you get to maybe 50 or 60,000. And then that's at the very low end of what would be considered a novel. Although, honestly, at this point in time, you know, with how many different ways you can, you know, take in books, whether it's through, you know, just paperback book or an audio book or an ebook, it's really changed as far as, you know, what, you know, the lengths of what's considered a book. So, you know, take what I've said with a grain of salt, but
fair
it'll
enough.
Probably be closer to maybe 300 pages. I'm thinking it's going to be about the length of Heirs of the Flesh, which was all close right. to 300 pages.
All right, cool.
And I'm not going to be one of those writers that actually makes the font bigger, so it increases the page size. Because then that just means I have to charge more.
Right.
So, all right. Cool. So, and that's what I'm working on. But you can get the books I do have out on Amazon, and you can get the audiobooks at audible.com and the ebooks wherever ebooks are sold.
Fantastic. So, as we record this, I'm only a couple of weeks away from the next Grindhouse Nights Film Festival.
Yes.
October 18th and 19th at Crossroads in Garwood, New Jersey. Doors open at 4 o'clock each day. We've got 30 awesome indie films across 2 days. We've got burlesque. We've got a new performer, Krisha Celeste, will be performing some belly dance. Of course, Nicole Oliva will be singing for us. As I mentioned, we've got our author, Damon Manx, and another author, a New Jersey local author, S.J. Crandall, will both be on site signing books and hanging out with fans. Tickets are on sale. If you go to filmfreeway.com and just search Grindhouse Nights Film Festival, it will pop up and you can buy your tickets there. And the reason I went with them, just so everybody knows, is the fees that they charge when you buy a ticket are way, way lower than any other ticket site.
Yep.
Because that's where I promote my festival, is on Film Freeway. So when you're Film Freeway Gold member, which I am, they give you a huge break on the ticket fees. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah. So you can buy your tickets in advance. And I have been asked this. Yes, they are available at the door, you know, but if you don't want to carry cash, you know, just get your ticket in advance, bring it with you, and avoid the line. We'll just check you in and you can enjoy the show. So we're really looking forward to it. For all the details, you can go to grindhousenightsfilmfest.com. Everything is there. The list of films, the award nominees, the schedule for each day. And there we have it. And for those who want to know how to get to Crossroads, I am sure Google Maps knows how to do that.
And isn't there a DVD that's come out?
Oh, my God. Yes, there is. Oh, my God. How could I forget? Tom will never forgive me. Yes, the movie that I co-produced and wrote a part of, Return to the Theater of Terror, is available on DVD. 4 awesome short films wrapped up with a really cool wraparound story. Go to theaterofterror.net. And because we're fancy, it's the British spelling of theater. So it's R, not E-R.
Yeah.
But yes, DVDs are available now. You can order. I think they ship in a couple of weeks or something like that. But, and then people have asked about streaming. Our distro company tells me we will be up on streaming sometime in the month of November. But awesome. For those of you who awesome. Still like physical media, go ahead to theaterofterror.net and place your order today.
I will be getting one, and I'm looking forward to it.
Awesome.
All right. So on that note, until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.